Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Wild Hunt, the No Ship Network podcast on the History Channel television series Vikings. I am your host, Steve.
I am your host, Em. And we are discussing Vikings Season 5, Episode 19, What Happens in the Cave. And this was written by Michael Hurst and directed by David Wellington. And before we head into our recap, I just want to give a big shout out to Sandra, who's been retweeting and liking our podcast on Twitter every single week for I don't know how long now. Thank you so much, Sandra.
Yes, thank you.
And this is also to all of our listeners who don't ever write in. Thank you for listening. For those of you who are, you know, quietly supporting us in your own way.
Yeah.
You're awesome. Thank you.
We appreciate it. You know, like the people who write in, it probably seems like they get all the love, but we love everybody.
Yes.
So thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you. So as been the trend for us this season, we are going to open up with the location of Iceland. So Floki enters the cave and fashions himself a long-lasting torch somehow.
Somehow, yeah. We see how he lights the fire. We just don't really know what the, I guess, accelerant, for lack of a better term. I don't know if that would be the right thing. Like, what is he using to keep that thing lit?
Well, maybe there's something special that he carries around in his voluminous robe. He's probably got many pockets.
Besides his attitude, you mean?
Yeah. But maybe there's something that aids in the everlasting torch that he's able to bring and whip around.
Yeah.
Twisty turns inside of a cavern.
I mean, it's hard to imagine that he'd be able to keep a can of something like that next to all the whoop ass that he's got in there. But whatever it is, though, like, yeah, I'm thinking to myself, I'm worried about it because I'm going, okay, he's only going to make it so far, and then that thing is going to give out, and then you're pretty much just dead because you can't, there's literally no light. You can't find your way back. How would you do that?
I know, you said that on our first viewing. You're like, when that light goes out, he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I would never go into a cave, because it's just like with just a torch like that, because I would be so worried about when it would go out. But Floki's obviously a lot braver than I, so.
He's determined, because he can sense it. He knows they are there, those gods. I'm sorry, I shouldn't make fun of Floki, but the world just did.
Yeah. Well, he knows the gods are right around the corner, and he can hear the dwarves hammering on their anvils deep down. And the irony of it is that he's thinking he's getting closer and closer to seeing his gods, and then he just sees a Christian cross, and he's just like, he laughs at first, and then it turns to tears.
It turns to wails.
Yeah.
That bring the house down.
Almost literally. It almost feels like we're kind of expected to believe that. I mean, I guess it's obvious that it's metaphorical because there's volcanic activity going on all around him. But the way that he's yelling and things are occurring at that time, almost like he created an avalanche with his cries of grief at the irony of this situation. And it looks like when there's the little mini volcanic slide outside, I couldn't be 100% sure, but it looks like it covers up the mouth of that cave,
right?
The way that he came in.
So is he interred forever with this cross?
Man, what worse fate could he ask for than that? Like, has he followed the gods so badly? Has he been so wrong about what he had thought that, you know, they would want for him and wanted him to do, that this is his ending punishment? This is his final. I guess we'll see next episode if he survived this and he gets out somehow. Because I did notice, I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody did, but when he came into that chamber or cavern, there was a shaft of light coming through. So there was another way out. He had kind of worked his way around to another exit, but who knows if that's blocked now too.
What do they say about in the trench, everybody's a believer?
There's no atheists in foxholes.
Okay, so, okay, maybe that's not really the right thing, but what if he converts? And then he's released somehow, and it somehow confirms his conversion. Do we want that?
No, I don't. I'm not putting that past Hurst, honestly. That sounds actually plausible. Like, it's just a matter of circumstance that, you know, some rubble falls out of the way and opens up a point of egress for him to get out. But it does it after he pleads with the Christian God, and then he converts. But I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I would rather have him just be dead, because I feel like this character has been so much. I don't want to see. And there, no matter what, if he dies like this, what we just saw was it. or if he lives another episode or another season. We're coming to the end anyway. So I feel like this character has been put through so much. I would rather see him go out being true to himself, I guess. Does that make sense?
Me too. Yeah, that's what I want. Maybe he'll turn that cross into a tool in some way.
Break it off of its base and just kind of hit some rocks with it.
Yeah. All right, so that's where we leave Iceland for now, maybe forever. I'm sure we'll come back to Iceland in season 6 if we don't come next episode.
Yeah, Floki better be around, because if I'm not putting up with Iceland with just Kettle and his wife. That's not happening. His son. It's just not happening. That will be bathroom break central. We're not even going to cover it. Is what's going to happen. We're just going to do.
We're just going to skip that location.
Starting with season 6, we're going to do our locations, and Iceland will not be there if Floki's not there. How about that?
All right, so next up, we instead of having a location, we have a leading up to a location, what we are calling leading up to Kattegat. And we're going to start with Bjorn's thread first. Bjorn and Harald make their journey across the rough seas, as Harald had warned him.
There's a good bit of comedy there, because he's just like, I warned you, Ironside. I warned you. You know, as everybody is swinging off of ropes and holding on for dear life, and a couple of people fall over to the port side of the Viking vessel, and they're actually brought back on, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah,
because like I totally expected those people just to be gone, and this was supposed to be a display of Bjorn's arrogance, I guess, for insisting that they sail at this time of year. And but then somebody falls off of the starboard side, and I don't think they get that person back, or it doesn't seem like it anyway.
Right, but it is funny though, with Harald saying I warned you about this. This is, I guess, in line with the grievance he has with the Ragnarssons, just kind of always being on the right side of fate. That's also discussed later with Fitzurk and Olaf. So, and he's just wanting to battle that idea. And so with him like stating, I told you so, or whatever, in so many words, it's him getting the upper hand that he feels he's deserving of.
I'm actually with him on this.
Yeah.
I think I would have been saying the same thing to Bjorn too. Like, God damn it, it's the wintertime. We shouldn't be doing this.
It's a bitter pill to swallow over and over again.
Yes. So he probably, I mean, like you pointed out, he probably feels a good, like, for whatever it's worth, I don't know, but he feels a certain amount of vindication that, like, yes, this is exactly why and he loses some ships, and he doesn't even know how many.
Yeah, losing ships means you lost men, too.
Right. That's a big deal, because, I mean, how much, whether it's assumed these people are in Valhalla or not, or whatever aside, you're also losing a lot of material, war material, foodstuffs, things of that nature. So
yeah, and this conversation about the loss of ships is happening as they have made landfall, they have disembarked off the ships, and Harald is having second thoughts about joining up with Bjorn at this time.
I feel like
probably because of all the bitter pills.
He's got a bitter pill OD. I feel like he wants to have some agency, and he wants his rank as king to be kind of, you know, he says, this is my army and we're going to do what I tell them to do.
Right.
And so then Bjorn's like, well, did you change your mind? You know, and he's like, well, maybe I did. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm going to make a deal with Ivar. And he's like, okay, well, then this is where it starts to come. And he's like, hey, Bjorn kind of drops down a few decibels. He's not yelling. He's like, you know, you're going to have to kill me if you make a deal with Ivar. And then so this becomes the genesis of the, you know, they send, okay, well, yeah. And if you know that I'm going to make a deal with Ivar, you're going to have to kill me. So killing one or the other is inevitable. So let's just start fighting. And they go at it. And I'd have to say they're a lot more evenly matched than I would have thought. They didn't.
Yeah, well, I didn't really think it was necessarily like, oh, it's going to happen inevitably. Let's go ahead and do it now. It was more like, I thought Harald was offended by the idea that Bjorn's like, because he says, I'll have to kill you. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing about Bjorn saying, it's almost like Harald was offended by the idea that it just comes so easily to Bjorn, like the idea of killing Harald.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. That's why he gets like, so upset.
That's
about
like a sure thing, like that. That Bjorn would undoubtedly come out on top.
Yeah, because that's why he says, like, I think you will bleed like any other man.
Right.
You know, I'm tired. You're absolutely right on that. I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because he's so tired of this prophecy, not prophecy stuff, but thinking that you're just going to be saved by the gods no matter what happens.
Because you're a Ragnarsson.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, if I take out my axe and I get pissed enough and I cut you, you're going to bleed like any other mm-hmm. fucking Viking. So let's test that.
Right. But then Gunnhild gets in the middle where she's been, but now she's, you know, literally physically placing herself.
We're done with the metaphors, folks. She is literally in between them.
But this time she's stopping the fight, not inspiring it for now.
She was the only person who could do that because, you know, she is who she is.
And she suggests that they should put their energies elsewhere where it matters, at least for now. And that penetrates their anger, and they agree, and they elbow bump like boop.
That would have been an excellent sound effect right there when they just do their. I love that though, the way that they were ready to kill each other. She comes in and tells him, hey, cut it out, straighten up. And then all of a sudden you see, you know, Harold just kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, yeah. And then they do the forearm bump, and they're good to go. They maybe don't want to hang around each other for the next like couple of hours, but they're back on the same page for the most part. What happens after Ivar is deposed? Whole nother story. You can already see that one coming.
I mean, what if we're reading that elbow bump wrong? What is this like, oh, this is going to happen again?
So that's like the pause button on a video game?
Yeah, it's the pause button.
Ooh, even better. Like, to be continued, bro. You know? I liked it, even though I am not that guy. I'm not like a high five bro type dude. It felt, there was a bit of it that felt real fratty, but at the same time, it was like, is that a word? I don't know.
It's fine.
Anyway, so we have to talk about Magnus here.
Yes, Magnus, who not only, it's not that he just cried out Jesus' name, like, Jesus! He was begging Jesus to save his life aboard the ship during the rough passage. And Amma, who had been tasked to watch over Magnus by Bjorn, saw all this, confronted him during the moment, and then confronted him again later.
This is a strictly non-Christian cruise here. You can't be doing that.
But what's interesting to me, though, about it is the fact that she tells Bjorn, did you know your brother was a Christian? And it's almost like he's being revealed as some sort of agent.
I got that feeling a little bit too. Like the way that Bjorn kind of looked over at like that in that general direction that he had stomped off in, I did get the feeling like the wheels are spinning in his head. Like, well, what does this mean?
Right.
You know, I don't know who he'd be an agent for at this point or what he could possibly do, but it just kind of, I don't know, maybe Bjorn's I know Bjorn's happy to see his actual brothers later on more than he is, you know, having this guy travel with him. But he's really just traveling with Harold anyway. And I feel like there's a red shirt type countdown on Magnus's life. I just don't know like when we're going to get the ticker down to zero. I'm thinking next episode, unless Hurst has some plans for him that include a little bit of complexity to the character, possibly in season 6. You know, I can hold out for that. Have him made interesting rather than an annoyance. I'll be all right with that.
Have him get the Fitzurk treatment.
Right. Come back from a plus one territory into, all right.
Speaking of Fitzurk, we have Fitzurk along with Olaf and Olaf's forces arrive on the outskirts of Kattegat. Olaf expresses doubts that this is the right idea because he has heard so much about Ivar. Ivar seems to be a force of nature, and Ivar's star seems to be enjoying some ascendancy, so he thinks fate is on the side of Ivar, which leads to a little mini interesting discussion between Fitzurk and Olaf about the idea of fate. Fitzurk has learned some things about fate because it's been something he's been focused on for so long. Mm-hmm. He believes the gods work in mysterious ways, and just because someone has success, it doesn't necessarily mean they're fated for good.
Fitzurk's really dropping some knowledge here. He's as they used to say back when I was a kid. It's like he's very. It's a very mature observation, really, and I think it's sober and it's balanced, and I agree with it. The way that he put it forward to somebody who is obviously a lot older and more experienced and everything. And he wasn't, He just kind of stated it as a clean fact or something that you should seriously consider in the light of day. Nothing that was like, he wasn't like trying to play up to Olaf, and he wasn't trying to like outdo him. He just kind of threw his point of view out there.
In a way, it was kind of strange to see Olaf so insecure about the situation, you know, heading towards Ivar and listening to Fitzurk, because I was thinking Olaf was going to become Fitzurk's teacher, and he seemed so large physically last episode, and now he seems so diminutive.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, on top of it, worried. So it was not what I was expecting as far as like the dynamics between the two of them. But I'm okay with it. It's just, you know, I did not predict it well at all.
That's a great point, though, because when you have him in the sweat lodge and he's got his big giant belly out there looking like the Buddha, right, and laughing like the Buddha and so on. And then Fitzurk is basically on the position of either sitting next to him or mm-hmm. lying before him the whole time. Yeah. And then now you have them standing together, and Fitzurk's taller than him, mm-hmm. bigger than him, like you pointed out. So it's almost like we're getting these. The show moves fast, as we're going to see with our Wessex chapter. And I think, like, when Fitzurk's coming into his ascendancy, not Ivar. So I think that's what this is all about. Fate has finally got him on the road that he needs to be, and he's accepted it for what it is and been through his trials. Not all the way yet, because he still has to learn about Thora. And I think his reaction to that is, well, I don't know, he can't kill Ivar twice, so we'll see.
And even despite Fitzurk's wise words to Olaf, Olaf still worries that they could be willingly marching towards their own death. And Fitzurk kind of just takes this in stride, like, yep, maybe.
Yeah. But I do, to Olaf's credit,
he does too.
He takes it in stride, and he kind of laughs too. And it's mm-hmm. it's that grand old Viking way of the way they just kind of go, yeah, we just got to laugh it in the face of death and just keep on trucking.
And so next we have Bjorn and Fitzurk's threads converging. Their armies kind of blend together as Bjorn enters Fitzurk's camp. And Bjorn at first thinks that Fitzurk means to support Ivar, but it turns out that no, he plans to attack Ivar. And Bjorn is happy and celebrates and says this is one of the happiest days of his life, which is quite a thing to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, that made me happy to hear that. I think for a lot of different reasons, just because he's been so glum this season, and to have the words like one of the happiest days of his life coming out of his mouth. And then, you know, Fitzurk being part of that for somebody like ever, that makes me happy too, because we've been so down on him for so long. So,
mm-hmm. I mean, it's really just been this season that we've kind of let off of that.
Yeah. This half season.
So, you know, from Bjorn's point of view, he's so happy to see Fitzurk, because, you know, him and Ube, they left on good terms, and they just kind of said, look, we're going to have to agree to disagree, and we're going to mm-hmm. each follow Ragnar's dream in our own particular fashion. And he recognized Ube's success, but they, you know, there was a lot of like older brother worship coming from Ube, but I don't know how Bjorn really felt about mm-hmm. him. He was kind of probably like, yeah, you're kind of like a drag. You know, you're a little bit of a teetotaler in this whole scenario. So I'm out. And then, you know, he's got this brother in air quotes, Magnus, who is just probably more of an annoyance than anything else. So, and then Ivar, he wants to dethrone and kill. And so Fitzurk is really the only one left. And when he finds out that Fitzurk is actually ready to make common cause with him, that would be a cause for happiness.
Right. But I think we should focus on for a second what Bjorn said about the gods frowning upon a brother killing a brother.
Yeah.
Now, so this, I think, supports what Fitzurk was saying to Olaf, because Ivar has to pay for killing Sigurd, right?
Okay.
But also, that might be the cost that comes to Fitzurk that the seer was talking about.
What do you think that cost would be to Fitzurk, that he loses his life?
He will be destroyed in some way as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, maybe Floki himself was being punished in a way, too, for killing Athelstan, who was maybe like a brother in arms, or should have been, as you know. I think Floki's circumstances is a punishment as well, and not necessarily by the Christian god or his own gods, but like if there was any perfect punishment for Floki, it would be what has happened to him, and it doesn't have to be the Christian god to do it. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Yeah.
So
I like what you're saying about Athelstan being a brother, because obviously him and Floki were at cross purposes to a certain extent, but the closeness between Ragnar and Æthelstan, and then the closeness between Floki and Ragnar. So they were connected. You know, there was only so many, you know, 6 degrees of Ragnar Lothbrok kind of thing. So that they were like almost extended family, or they should have been. So when you talk about killing brothers and having a penance to pay for that, then that would fit with what Floki's doing or having to go through at this point.
And both Floki and Æthelstan being, let's say, spiritual brothers in a sense, because they both were searching for something, but they were both taking different paths to get there. And maybe that was Floki's intolerance was his downfall.
Floki's willful in a sense. And I don't know how that plays into other religions, but I know with Christianity, you're supposed to kind of give yourself over to what is perceived as being the will of God. But Floki never did that. He always felt like it's almost like he did what he wanted to do, and then he used the God's divine inspiration as the excuse for it. Whether it was killing Æthelstan, moving everybody to Iceland, whatever have you. So I think, you know, Æthelstan followed his to his end, and now Floki's
followed his to his.
Yeah. Shall we move on to Kattegat?
Yes. All right. Kattegat. So Kattegat opens up with Freyda screaming, "Where is my baby?" She pleads with Ivar to tell her where her baby is, and he strikes her. Freyda has a great scream, I just want to say. "Where's my baby?" I could listen to her scream all day. I know that's weird.
She should sing in a band.
Yeah, she should.
You know, like just a really gnarly hardcore band.
Yeah.
And she could just, and it could be called "Where's My Baby?" The denial.
They'll open up for Christian magic.
Christian magic. The denial of Ivar in this scene is pretty sickening. When he was just like, you know, what is your excuse for producing a monster? This is not my fault. Like, you're basically just, you left your kid out to be killed in the Viking fashion, like they used to do. And now you're looking for, instead of standing by that, you're looking for reasons why this wasn't your fault. He can't own anything that he does that doesn't come out looking like a complete success. It's got to be somebody else's fault. There's an extenuating circumstance. There's this, there's that, there's the other thing. It's never going to be poor Ivar's fault that he fucked up and did something wrong and just owns up to it. And
he has no sense of her pain over it. He just has nothing but pure anger at the fact that he's got someone who's just kind of like butting up against what he did.
It's almost like he wants it to be either understood, explained away, or barring those two circumstances, just forgotten. Mm-hmm. Like, and when he's not getting it, it just raises his ire so much that he's slapping her. He's physically abusing her because he just can't deal with the truth on that level, that he has to lash out like that. And even after he's done hitting her, he still hits that partition that's behind him a couple of times. He's got this like petulant rage that has to manifest itself in a physical form somehow. He just hasn't developed any interpersonal skills that allow him to express anger and disappointment in any other fashion than destructive violence.
He's unmoored by it, though, because you see him walking, you know, I don't know if it's through his hall, but where all of his people are, and he's unsteady on his feet, and he hasn't been like that in a long time. Or maybe he has been, and maybe that's why he's been crawling around. I feel like that's been more of choice. Of him doing the crawling around. But the fact that he was unsteady on his feet, I think, is most likely supposed to indicate he's unsteady in his rule.
I agree. I agree completely. I said what I had in my notes was Ivar is on shaky ground. His opinion polls are down. And I agree with you, because the last couple of times that we've seen him transport himself around, it was, you know, we saw the snake-like trails that he had left in in Fitzurk's room when he told him he needed to go be the emissary to King Olaf. Then we saw him take the baby out, and, you know, he had crawled away doing that. Then we saw him on his chariot. So it's all of these ways that are not him actually doing the walking. Then, like you said, when we see the walking again, it's almost like he's doing it for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, because we've seen him a lot more sure than that. At the beginning of this, of like 5A, it almost seemed like he was just walking normal. You know, or I'm sorry, I guess it would be the beginning of 5B or somewhere in that area. There was a period of time where it's almost like just to give you an example, a coworker of mine who isn't quite caught up yet, but he had mentioned that he watches the show, and he was talking about, he goes, I thought Ivar was crippled though, because I keep seeing him walking around, and he was a few episodes behind where I was, and I was like, well, you know, this is what it was, and I didn't want to give away too much because I wasn't sure where he was at, but.
Yeah, so it turns out it's more of an indicator of where he is, maybe emotionally, and maybe also indicate something about his fate or favor of the gods too, possibly. I just think back to when he first attempted to walk, when he had created his own braces at the time. And this is back when we still had some good feelings for him, or when we were first getting to know him at any rate. And we felt so bad when he fell and Sigurd made fun of him.
Yeah. Yep. Back when we had a modicum of sympathy for the old Balnus.
That was season 4B.
I don't remember, but it's all gone now.
Yeah.
There hasn't been sympathy for Ivar for a long time. Mm-hmm. There was hope that he could be a more complex character at some point in this in 5B, but I feel like that got, you know, washed away pretty quick too.
Yep, now he's choking the mother of his child.
And so this is bad news for Freydis, because if he can even question the fact that this wasn't his child, then there's a certain amount of the spell that she's kind of like cast over him that's wearing off. So it's not that he's going to just wake up and see reality for what it is all of a sudden, because he probably still believes he's a god. He's picking and choosing what he believes that she is. He's picking and choosing what he believes out of what she's told him. Mm-hmm. So he'll stick to the deity part, but maybe not believe that, well, that wasn't my child anyway. But that seems like less like him accusing her of infidelity, and more like him just not wanting to own up to his own actions anyway.
One more thought I wanted to share that I had when I was watching him walk through the hall where everybody was watching him stumble. That might have reaffirmed his decision to leave Baldur out in the cold, because he was upset by everybody turning to stare at him, and he had to say, carry on, you know. So I think, you know, his reasonings for leaving Baldur were cemented, that he felt like he was in the right to do so.
I could see that. I could see him thinking that, because he's just one more strike in that column. Like, well, at least he's dead, but at least he doesn't have to go through this.
Right.
He doesn't have to endure this ridicule.
So he's back addressing his people later after all these confrontations with Freydis have happened, and she's up on the dais with him, seated in her throne, and she looks uncomfortable, malcontent, sitting there. And he tells his people lies about the baby, how the baby was beautiful and shining, definitely favored by the gods, but the gods took it away.
And he doesn't know why.
Yes. And then he's on to other business, talking about how, yes, we were going to sail the seas and raid York, but Fitzurk is not there with Olaf. And so he must be just immediately suspicious about that fact.
Yeah.
For him to decide to go ahead and reinforce. Why wouldn't he be, though? I mean, the way he left things with Fitzurk, he could also be thinking, well, maybe word got out what happened to his girlfriend. Who knows?
It's the smart play to assume that Fitzurk's not going to act on your behalf in the way that you want him to. It was a stupid move to send him away like that in the first place. He should have found something other, more quote, air quote, productive for him to do. But that's just been Ivar's decision-making process from the beginning. Choose the worst decision and double down on it. So,
well, it's actually not a bad decision, though, to reinforce
that. Yeah, that's like actually the only thing that he's done that's but you know, I've mentioned this a few times before recently, so I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I really feel like the signs of Ivar's imminent demise are stacking up.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if he makes it through 5B, which would be just the next 45 minutes that we all haven't seen, you know, the next episode. So if he makes it much past 5B into season 6 at all, I feel like the first little bit of 6A is got to be his demise. I just feel like there's the track record that we've seen from the show, the way Hurst runs things, is that you don't have a villain that sticks around for too long, because he likes to give the comeuppance for that villain. Just take your pick. You know, all of the villains that we've had, even some of our heroes get to go too. So it's not...
So you don't think he's going to try to redeem him?
Man, it would be really difficult to do that. Just from a story writing point of view, I would think, But also from being in the audience point of view, there's almost nothing that could happen that would mm-hmm. make him redeemable at this point. After he had these people set on fire, after he just left his child to die out there, after. And I also think that now not only do you have like two of his brothers plus Olaf and Harald all wanting to get at his throat, and they're going to come as a unified force. So there's not going to be a battle of three armies type thing. It's going to be two armies, and it's going to be not in Kattegat's favor. You've also got Freydis. If you looked at the way, because you mentioned her discontent sitting on the dais after he choked her, the look on her face when he left the room, she was just like, it everything dawns on her, and then she realizes probably that there's a certain course of action she has to take. So
I know my dad was like, oh, she's going to be his downfall.
She's at least going to be part mm-hmm. of it. You know, I don't think he's wrong. I mean, I think that he's, it could just, I don't think it's just going to be her though. That's, mm-hmm. that's why I'm saying that. Like there's knives at the front and there's knives at the back mm-hmm. at this point. And so that's why I don't, you know, and I with so many other balls in the air with what Harald's doing with Bjorn, and then you got Fitzurk and Ube and all the stuff going on in Wessex, like Ivar is almost going to become a distraction at some point for larger story points to keep going. I feel I've been wrong many, many times before, so I don't want to put too much into it. I don't want to overstate the point, so we can move on.
But I think it's cool that Ube is not out seeking revenge against Ivar, because they had some pretty, it seemed like it was... they were the ones that were set up to fight, you know, for a period of time there.
Yeah.
But I guess in a way you could say that Ube is like, he isn't, what is it when revenge, like by living well?
The best revenge is good living.
The best revenge is good living. That's Ube right now.
Yeah.
In regards to Ivar.
You know, he basically turned around and said, you don't mean anything to me. I don't care about you. I'm going to go farm. I'm going to lead these people. Mm-hmm. We're going to have successful lives. We're going to raise children. We're going to fulfill our father's dream. You go be a petty power grabber on your own time. Mm-hmm. See where that gets you. And this is where that gets you. You're going to die. Ivar's in the jungle, baby. He's going to die. All right. So we have made it to Wessex, everybody's favorite part, I'm assuming. It's our favorite part, anyway, of most episodes of 5B.
Yeah, yeah.
Wessex seems to be the best return for the money. So
it's been the ascendant star of this half season.
So Judith is for whom the bell tolls.
Immediately.
Yes, immediately. And wow, I just didn't think that it was going to happen this fast. I really didn't. Mm-mm. And as much as I've been down on Judith ever since the death of Æthelred, I kind of feel like I still would have liked to have seen some scenes with her and Lagertha being like Ecgbert and Ragnar and having some drinks and maybe get choked up and tearful about their lives and where they're going. And you know, one of them's going to go on this other path. One of them's going to die, but they can drink and talk about it. And we don't get any of that. We just get no more words from Judith. She does a significant look at Alfred and she's dead. And
it was bizarre. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a TV death treated that way before.
The only one that was that was almost that fast was Aethelwulf and the Beastings. But that still took.
But that wasn't an opening of an episode. That was at the end of an episode, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was. It wasn't nearly that fast. But that's the only one I could think of that was even close.
Yeah.
In the Viking. So Lagertha comes in. And she gives Alfred some stern words. They're not necessarily meant to comfort him, but kind of to steel his will and his resolve to be a good king. Mm-hmm. She talks about how she's, you know, like one mother kind of looking at what another mother has done for a son, mm-hmm. and talking from real experience and saying, look, she sacrificed to make sure that you could be king. So you need to repay her life and all of the stuff she's done for you by being the greatest king you can be. Mm-hmm. So if Alfred wasn't driven before because of his grandfather or because of the stories of his actual biological father, then now he's definitely going to be on the path of trying to be the best king he can possibly be.
And they also just gave Lagertha credit for Alfred's great deeds, at least indirectly.
It's all about the Vikings.
Because if it wasn't for Lagertha, he might not have realized that his mother did all this stuff, and then he just would have been a so-so king.
Yeah. He would have been a 75%er. And right. That's not good enough for Alfred the Great. You don't get to be a whatever the great if you're just 75%.
Or if you don't have Lagertha.
So as Lagertha walks away from the scene, we get a flashback of she has a memory. She has a flashback of what actually happened after she saw Hickman die in the battle. And this entails her basically just going down to zero fucks given, throwing away her sword, stripping away some of the battle gear that she had. Mm-hmm. And this is where we learn that her knee is just really fucked up, because I don't think there was too much of a focus on this and before now. Mm-hmm. And the old medicine lady, the witch from the forest, mm-hmm. takes her in. And I really dug this scene because it felt like it was you had a very paganistic way of applying medicine to Lagertha, whether it be psychological or actually physical. Mm-hmm. And it was done right there in the land of Christianity at the time. So I thought that was cool. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in this episode where you have certain religions being accepted or denied in certain places where you don't expect them to be. So you wouldn't necessarily expect Lagertha to be taken to the hut of a pagan witch lady, you know? And I mean, I don't necessarily know what religion she's practicing, but it's not the Christianity of that time. That's for sure. It's something more than that.
It's older. Yeah.
Other than that. Yeah. Older. And she gets her hair cut off and she is told, your old life is dead. You must forget it. And then when the hair goes in the fire, she says, this is the beginning of your new life.
She says she's going to be reborn. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we're going to see Lagertha have some sort of spiritual conversion or what that means necessarily. If it's going to if it's more to do with her relationship to the lands in East Anglia, maybe not so much a spiritual thing. But I do wonder about the spiritual conversion just because she was bathing her face in holy water later on in this episode.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, when she said that she's going to be reborn, you know, obviously this scene happens before Lagertha is found by Judith, mm-hmm. at the beginning of last episode. So when she's telling Judith, she's like, I no longer have my shield. It's because her old life is completely gone. Mm-hmm. So she gets to use none of that. And she's, you know, she's trying to play it straight and go forward with this new life. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't have a shield. She used to be a shield maiden. So mm-hmm. There's metaphor, but there's actual reality mixed in with it, too. So it makes it pretty neat. But who she's going to be, I'm super interested to see who that is. Because, I mean, we're all on Team Lagertha. Nobody's a Lagertha hater, right? Or at least nobody who's written into us.
Yeah.
And I just don't assume that there's anybody out
there.
Don't
write in. Don't.
Yeah, yeah. Like, save your time. And, so I mean, we're all it's stating the obvious. We're all like really excited to see who she's going to become in season six and what her ultimate destiny is, or her demise if we get to see that. So yeah.
So up next we get the commencing of Uba and Frodo's one-on-one mano a mano battle. And the fight is brutal, as we predicted. Thankfully, Uba lives, as some of us hoped and some of us also predicted. This is partly due to Torvi planting a sword in one of Frodo's men's back. So I guess we should discuss this fight real quick before we move further.
First of all, you can see Darth Maul clearly in the background of when they're kind of going down the rules.
Isn't there a couple of them?
There might have been more than one, but there was definitely one. It seems like those the Viking priest types, well, I guess priest would be the wrong word to use for them, but whatever they are, the religious guys who paint themselves up, they always seem to come in pairs, so there's probably another Darth Maul hanging around. But the rules of this are like Thunderdome, you know? Two men enter, one man leave. Mm-hmm. And it's to the death. And so, interestingly enough, and I didn't realize that they were going to do it like this, I thought that they would just, like, have a third of that army not being down for what was going on, and it would just throw a wrench in the game. But apparently, if Frodo was to have won this to the death, they would all have to then turn around and attack Wessex. And so, there's a lot at stake here. And this fight is probably one of the better choreographed fights that I've seen.
Yeah.
If not in the whole series, at least in the last couple of seasons. I mean, and when I first started watching it, I was thinking, man, this is just as good and brutal as Bjorn versus Uncle Rolo / Dad Rolo, whatever you want to call it, from way back. But I think this one might actually, not in the emotional stakes necessarily, but just in the choreography and brutality stakes, I think that it probably beat that one.
Well, like the way they were slugging each other was reminiscent of kinetic balls. Because yeah. You have like one slug and like kind of bounce off the other to where the momentum just led to the other one slugging the other, if that makes sense.
You're talking about those little, the silver balls on the wire.
Yeah.
And you hit them and then yeah. I liked how when, you know, it's that back and forth is what yeah. you're getting at. And so Uwe has that. He misses his shot and King Frodo comes in with his, and then they both fall down like Rocky One style to where, you know, the ref is going to come in and start counting and whoever gets up. And this is where Uwe has a reaffirmed belief in his gods because he asks them for help and he gets it.
Yes. And he gets energized to get the job done.
And there was no Samwise Gamgee to save Frodo this time. Although somebody tried to, and they got a sword right through their gut for trying to do it through the backside, courtesy of Torvi. And I thought this was awesome. I mean, I was pumping my fist in the air the whole fight. Let me ask you something. When you were watching this, did anything... I got reminded a little bit of Dune when Paul Moadib fights Fade Rosa at the end, mm-hmm. and Torvi's watching. She's kind of like Chani.
Yeah.
And so when he gets knocked down and she's like, she's looking at him like, get your ass back up, you know? And it's almost like she's his coach too, or his, you know, the guy, she's like the girl in his corner just going, get up, get up.
I sense that, but I also sense like this frustration with having to will her body in place when she just wanted to get in there and help him.
I felt that as well. It was her instinct
yeah.
to just pull out yeah. her weapon and go in there and fuck shit up. But there was something that you said when we watched it the first time at your dad's mm-hmm. house, and you had said there's got to be a better way for people to solve problems and to get to the bottom of stuff than this.
Yeah.
And I think part of her frustration is that she was thinking the exact same thing you were, because she stated as much
last episode
when she was saying what she said about, like, you guys think that it's, you just get in there and fight. So that was kind of like a foreshadowing from last episode. But what you were saying, I feel like that sentiment is shared.
It's such a waste.
Yeah. You know, I mean, nobody's sad about Frodo, King mm-hmm. Frodo, except for that guy who tried to run in. And I mean, you know, we haven't seen Douchebeard Braids in a while. And so that should have let us know that he was going to lose the fight.
Yeah, because he was sporting those.
Right. And it's been a bit. You know, we used to have for newer listeners, we used to have a ranking system. And he would have definitely got some high points for those. He was sporting. Anyway, so now everybody has to go be peaceful farmers.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad thing.
No, not really. I mean, you could end up with a lot worse of a situation.
You could be dying in battle.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting the Wessexians.
You could be getting sexed up, like Color Me Bad in Wessex. No. All right. Get that out. Just that she's over here shaking her head. No, it's not going to happen. So
Uba is then taken to the royal villa to convalesce, and Torvi and Lagertha are reunited at that moment. And it's a very quick reunification because Lagertha basically says, yes, it's hard to kill me. How's Uba? And Torvi's off to find out how Uba is. She's
Lagertha could take care of herself.
That's all been resolved for Torvi within moments.
Yeah.
So she's...
Well, she's just kind of like, hey... Well, she had stated as much in earlier episodes. She was like, look, I know Lagertha. I know her character. She's not going to be doing any of this crap on purpose to fuck with anybody. Yeah. So when she comes back, she's coming back because she's ready to come back. And if she sees her alive and somewhat healthy, she's good to go. That's all she needs to know. They'll catch up on this story some other time with a couple of curved horns of ale. That's, you know, that can wait. So there's a couple of scenes where Torvi comes in. The first one, Uwe is still unconscious. And she's, you know, there's two nuns that are praying over him.
And she's in that dress.
Yes, she's in the dress. It's a very nice dress.
It is a nice dress. Yeah. It looks very soft.
And the second time she comes in, she kicks the nurses out because Ube is, he's a little bit better. So I'm imagining a couple of days have gone by. And because he took some horrendous wounds, even at the end of this, when you see them leave, it's...
Oh, he's got gouges out of his face.
Yeah.
Like multiple spots. Ugh. Yeah.
So she can see, she can sense that something's wrong. Torvi can. And so he says, go get me the cross. And he looks at the cross and says, this is just a brooch, a pendant, something I would wear. It doesn't speak to me. What speaks to me are the old gods, the gods of our people. I asked them for help during this battle, and they answered me. And once again, I accept them, the gods of my father, the gods of my people. And she's so happy about this.
She climbs under the covers as soon as he starts talking about the old gods.
You had me at Odin. And so it's a... I like this because there's this awesome contrast here of what's going on, because here is Ube in the most Christian of Christian countries at this point. I mean, I guess besides Rome, you know, not that. But anyway, so here he is there, and he is accepting his original religion, his old gods. And then you have Floki, who had thought that Iceland was the land of gods, ending up being stuck in a room with a big old crucifix.
Inexplicably.
So things are just, it's people finding their religion in weird spots. I liked it. But there was a parallel going on. It was an inversion type parallel, I guess, unless I might be making something up
yin
here
and
by
yang.
Saying yin and yang. Yeah. And I really liked what he said here, too. He says, I'm not a Christian. I wanted what being a Christian could do for me and my people. And after reading that history of the Vikings, that was really what a lot of the conversions boiled down to. Mm. It was so people could get married to somebody's daughter and cement an alliance and gain rights to land and so on and so forth. These people weren't having actual religious conversions. They were going, this is completely, you know, utilitarian. Let's get it on. Let's do it.
So we have a scene where Alfred leads the Danish Vikings to East Anglia. Lagertha is with him, and he speaks to everyone once they're there and talks of the gift of the land, which was Ragnar's dream that has been brought to them by Uba. And Lagertha is down in the soil, and she talks to Ragnar about how this was our dream.
Yeah.
Do you see this, Ragnar? And it's a nice moment.
I liked it. It was sweet. It's like, this is, and she said we. She uses the word we. So it's almost like, you know, them two being married and having a farm, a homestead, and kids to raise and stuff like that. Like, this was what we originally wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And now finally we can give it to our people as a whole after all of this mess of betrayal and bloodshed and craziness and Ivar and everything else.
So the next scene we have with Lagertha, she's visiting the royal crypt within the royal villa. So she's back in Wessex. She's no longer in East Anglia. Mm-hmm. I guess part of this scene is to show us that she is back in the royal villa.
I thought so.
And maybe also just to show her respect or her regard for Judith and Ecgbert
in
particular.
Because there's the tiles, I don't know what you would call them, like almost like some gravestones are like that. They don't come up. They're just flat, you know? And there's the one that says Ecgbert. There's other Latin writing and it says Ecgbert. And it's almost like she's there to like pay her respects to say, you know, even though you tried to fuck us on this whole thing, you know, what you actually did say found its home at the end of it. So
she might be saying goodbye too, because she might not be intending to ever come back.
That's possible. Yeah. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Because we will see that she's going to leave with Uba to East Anglia.
Now we are getting to one of the final scenes in Wessex, and Alfred and Elswith pay their thanks to Uba and Torvi for everything that they've done, because they basically stopped a Danish Viking invasion of Wessex. And so now they're all going to be heading back to East Anglia to go farm their lands. And Lagertha doesn't want to be left behind. She says, hey, if it's okay with you guys, I want to tag along and I want to go home. And I think she's kind of saying she wants to be, well, obviously she's saying she wants to be around her people, but she's also saying that she's kind of done with being around the royal villa and living like that and being around all of this, maybe even being around all the Christian stuff. I don't know, but she's just ready to go.
And this is, I think, where her new life is going to be. So maybe that's why she also refers to it as home. Like, this, she's finally going to live out the dream that her and Ragnar had always wanted.
Yeah. All right. And now we are heading into feedback. You've heard what we had to say about the episode. Now it's time to listen to what you have to say. Who is first?
Old Tan Viking. Brian is first. Haven't heard from Brian in a while.
The title of his letter is Bald-er. He starts off, he says, is Ube freaking Ragnar reincarnated or what? He's got that side-eyed cocked head deal down. He's definitely my number two Ragnarsson. If he shaves his head, I might have to bump him up to number one. Bjorn is still my boy, Blue. Sorry, Bjorn is just the man. From his pat on the fur for Alfred, boo, to the bear wearing hands behind the back, to the bro code with Harold speaking of the shoulder shrug after the fight was priceless. Now for Ivar, I'm coming around. Let me give you all a little history of this handicapped Viking. I was born with club feet, so at birth, my feet were twisted in a way that, from what my mom said, was like seal flippers. Now I had great doctors, I played every sport, even a college-level baseball, but you didn't run that much in the game. Point being, I can relate. If I was born at any other time in history, it would have been probably like Ivar, except my feet were upside down, so I don't think I could have walked like him, but basically I feel for him on that level. I would probably have done the same thing, not condoning or anything, but I get it. Not so much of the old burning innocent people, but I can understand a reason to not go through life in constant pain and not wanting your son or whoever going through the same thing. So I kind of like him, but I still want Fitzurk to give him the old what did the five fingers say to the face slap treatment. Now for my premonition of the baldness running the world theory. Ooh, buddy, it's definitely happening. When I saw my new bestie, Olaf, I said, yes! Boo to come and teaming with Ball Bjorn. I almost jumped in his arms like Fitzer did that. That was the best moment of the show for me. So, yep, Burns style. Excellent. As I sit on my mountain watching it all come together. Last two things, Floki. Oh, Floki. The laugh came back, then went really bad. But I think he'll get out somehow. I can't see him going out like that. If he used the cross to dig his way out, awesome, but probably won't happen. And Judith with the quickest cancer death ever. I really didn't care. I think guys are in this show for the broness. Girls like the strong women. I do, but she was just, well, just Judith. I gave her a quick bye. Sorry, so long. Had some things to say for Ivar. I get it, buddy. Okay, I'm done. Check out my ice, Floki. Bye.
Bye. Ice, Floki.
So the old tan Viking is giving us a little bit of insight into how Ivar could possibly be seen as a sympathetic character. So
thank you for writing that into us, because that's valuable, and it gives us a little bit more. I mean, as Steve already said, it gives us a little bit more insight into him, that where we can maybe have a little bit more understanding, even though it's still hard to embrace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard sell regardless, but it's a different way to look at it. And we appreciate it, and I'm with you on all the baldness stuff.
And I like how you brought up about Ube being freaking Ragnar reincarnated, because at the moment that he pulls the knife out of his holster on his back, that was the most Ragnar moment that I've seen from any of the Ragnarssons.
Definitely,
because I know everybody's been talking about it, you know, popping up, especially with Ube and Bjorn. But to me, that almost had like a genuine or authentic quality to it, unlike the others.
A lot of that has been swing and miss, but this was a grand slam out of the park. I mean, I was already smiling that whole fight because it was just so well done. But to see him do that just that little motion, those 2 seconds right there, sold the whole thing for me.
So are guys in this for the broness? Even he put a question mark next to it, like he wasn't sure if that's necessarily the case.
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't seen stats on the type of guy and the psychological makeup of who is the common Viking fan. I know that if you know, we have spent most of this season, pretty much, we started it like last season or the season before, I'm not sure, but we would occasionally go over to Em's dad's house to watch it the night that it came out, because we don't actually have cable. But we've been doing it consistently now for months. Mm-hmm. And the ads that you see during the commercial breaks are really geared towards, I mean, if it isn't, the ubiquitous like medication for some sort of ailment, or everything from, you know, high blood pressure to psoriasis to whatever, to diabetes to whatever. There's a lot of GMC truck commercials. Yeah. There's a lot of like real manly man stuff. And then I haven't seen him so much in the last like 2 or 3 weeks, but there was those three guys who dress up like the Vikings.
Yeah, they must do some, obviously, some research in the demographics that are watching this show, and that's how they aim their advertisement. But I wonder if it's also a local thing. So if it's based on the demographics in a particular local community, so maybe there's more women watching it in another, like, higher concentrated area, and if their commercials are a little bit different.
That would be really interesting to find out.
Yeah.
I would, you know, just for the sake of good advertising and good sociological work, I would hope that would be the case, because I think a lot of females watch this show.
We have a lot of females that write into the show.
That's why I think it, you know what I mean? So I feel like it would be remiss for people not to do that. But if it is local, then I think they've figured out that it's mostly guys around here who watch it, because it just seems like they really, really want you to buy a truck.
And so, and as a female, I can say that, you know, the strong female characters that are in the show is definitely an element of it that I like about it. But I'm also drawn to other things. I'm drawn to the setting. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn to the history of it. I'm drawn also to the complexity of characters that we find in some of them, and specifically Ragnar and Harald now. So that sort of thing is what draws me personally. So, and I'm sure it's different for everybody.
You know, when you look, I just had this thought occurred to me, because you think about like what are some of the more superficial reasons that a person could watch a show? And you think about eye candy. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some eye candy for guys on this show. But I would say that ratio is like guys are at a disadvantage, because I think there's a lot more eye candy for the ladies out there.
I think Freydis is good looking.
Sure, I'm not saying there's
Judith. Who else? We've got Amma now, and we've got. I mean, there's a lot of good-looking women in this show.
I'm obviously
Lagertha.
I'm giving credit where it's due, but I think over the course of the show, like when you look at the long game here, there's been a lot more eye candy for the guy or for the ladies. I think
my dad gets goo goo every time Torvi's on screen.
Right. And I mean, I understand that, but what I'm saying is, I mean, you like the list of guys is just, I think the list of guys comes out to be longer, is all I'm saying.
I don't know.
Maybe we'll have to break it down. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to like break this down, like at the end of the series, and just have a podcast about something like that. Like, we'll do some statistics.
Thank you, Brian.
Yes. Thank you, Brian.
Up next, we have Dahlia General. Salute.
Salute to the general.
And she says, hi, no shippers. One episode left. It feels like we just started on our march to Valhalla yesterday. I know, sniveling is definitely not Viking, so I'll just get on with it. Weird timing issues. So one day, Judith tells the court she has a lump in her breast, and the next day, she dies. At least the show seems to suggest it's the next day. If we're working on the same timeline as the fight between Uba and Halfdan's separated at birth twin brother, King Frodo.
You're right that it has to be the next day, because those two times, they can't be. You can't even entertain that notion that they wouldn't be in the same timeline. That's crazy. You couldn't do that.
I don't
see how that would fit. So yeah, it's from the time that Lagertha.
You mentioned Elswith was showing,
but that isn't until on another viewing, I noticed that wasn't until the end of the episode when all of the Vikings are leaving to go to the East Anglia settlement. So that could have been the whole time that Ube was recuperating.
Yeah.
That it took, because she hasn't been showing in any other episode.
Hmm. I kind of failed on that one.
It's literally the next day. She's talking about it. Lagertha paints her face with the blue, and they talk about how they're going to do whatever and face their challenges, and then she's dead.
There is no way to explain it away.
Nope.
Dahlia's next point. Women with balls. Loved how Lagertha was at Judith's bedside dispensing sound advice to Alfred. But would she really have been allowed to be there at that time? Torvi killing the man who was about to interfere with the death by combat. Combat of Uba and Frodo. No compulsion, just a sword directly through him. Gunhild stepping between Bjorn and Harald to stop their whose dick is bigger argument. I couldn't help but laugh at the bro elbow bump once they agreed to disagree, at least for now. Yeah, it was a great moment. Boop.
You know, I don't question the the realisticness of any of the actions of the women in this episode. Like, I feel like they're all in line with their character, but I do agree with you, Dahlia, that Lagertha, would she have been allowed in the room?
Yeah.
I don't know. She was allowed at the table with them.
It seems presumptuous of her,
too. She's in the court. You know, she's been welcomed into the court. She sat at the table with the king and his mother. And I don't know. I feel like it's a... You could probably make a sound argument for and against this, but it didn't really... I didn't really think about it till you brought it up, so it didn't ruffle my feathers.
And it just... the way she quietly or wordlessly tells Elswith, "Move out of the way, girl."
Yeah.
"I've got some advice to dispense." It was, I don't know, it just rubbed me a little bit the wrong way.
Well, I mean, you know, if there's a, like, I don't know how much anybody should believe, you know, put faith in these, like, hierarchies of people like alpha and beta and all that kind of stuff. I think they're largely constructs, but whatever, without getting into that conversation, you could definitely say that if those things are true, that Lagertha is an alpha female.
Oh, yeah.
And so she's kind of like, "Hey, move over. I'm going to come in and talk to him for a second." And I think she would, most women in her position would probably, you know, being young like that, would just get out of the way for this Viking shield maiden queen.
Dahlia's next point, cutting from location to location. I feel like Hearst realized that people just loathe the Iceland scenes, and so now he's interspersing them between good scenes and not lingering in any place too long. Okay, I know that's not the case, and he's trying to catapult us forward to the finale next week, but humor me here. No, I had a similar thought because the episode, or I didn't have a similar thought, but I thought about the fact that this episode is named "What Happens in the Cave." Like, he was anticipating our thoughts is what I'm saying, and he was way off.
If that's what he was doing, yes, he was way off, because nobody wanted to know what was going to happen. I mean, we wanted to see what Floki was going to see, of course, but other than that, it was kind of like, all right, move along.
We could have got there faster, though.
Yep.
To that moment. Next point, Uba's realization. Did anyone else wonder if, when Uba was clearly almost beaten and dead and started to pray to the Christian God, if he was praying for death or for strength? I really wasn't sure which it was. Strength. That's where I'm... And he wasn't praying to the Christian God. It was to Odin, and we also learn later Frey and Thor.
Yes.
But it was Odin's name he was saying, mm-hmm. if you look at the closed captions.
And we got to hear a little bit of Wardruna in that scene.
Yes, that was nice.
And we actually got to hear a little bit of Wardruna last episode too, when Lagertha is in the bed at the royal villa, and mm-hmm. she's starting to have her, like, fever dream.
Do they have a new CD out that you just got?
They do. Uh-huh. Yeah. And but that it's not any music from that. It's the new CD is, it's called Scald.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot different. So the stuff that they were using was music that I think they had, they're kind of recycling it, used it before.
Dahlia says, "Athelstan's revenge. All I'm saying is that I really hoped we'd hear Athelstan whisper in the background, 'Ah, snap,' when Floki saw that cross in the cave."
Could we get like a...
We need an edit.
like have the ghost of Athelstan moonwalk in the background.
Well, was it Family Guy with the... David Boreanaz, Aurora Borealis?
Yeah, yeah.
And like something like that where...
Hey, guys.
Yeah. That was Family Guy, right?
Yes, it was. Okay. I believe so, yeah, it was. Yeah, because it was Brian and Stewie, and they were like, "Look, it's the Aurora Borealis," and it's his face up there, and he's like, hey guys.
So we could have something like that with Athelstan. He's like, "Aw, snap." Dahlia says, "Uncreative endings. Next week, do you think in the middle of the battle, Bjorn will have a bit of a deja vu moment and think to himself, 'Wow, I feel like we did this in Paris. Brother against brother. Someone I really love will be hurt, and we don't know if they'll survive. Either Fitzurk or I will be stopped from actually killing Ivar at a crucial moment. I guess we'll see.'" You know, I didn't even think about that. But Bjorn's experience with his father and his uncle, or his uncle and his father.
Yeah, it's his uncle and his father one way or the other.
But that's a good point. And I feel like a failure for not thinking about that during our coverage.
Yeah, I get to. Hey, it's all. I mean,
but Dahlia, the general, came in and set us straight here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dahlia. Side note from Dahlia. She says, "Shouldn't there be a replacement seer in residence in Kattegat? How does one train to be a seer? Is there seer school? What do they do there? Is it like Hogwarts, but instead of practicing spells, they practice vision quests?" Whatever it is, I'm sure it's foul.
I feel like I'm reminded of The Breakfast Club. How does one pursue a career in the custodial arts? Or you want to be a seer? You think it's funny? I am the eyes and ears of this town. You don't think I do, but I read your runes. All great points.
And Dahlia signs off with, until we raid again, Dahlia General. Salute.
To the general. Thank you, Dahlia.
Yes, thank you. It's nice hearing from you.
All right. Up next is Raven. Raven says, well, the title of her letter is, Uba, Uba, Uba. And she says, hey, Evan, Steve, I hope you are well. And like always, these are my thoughts on episode 19, What Happens in the Cave. Rest in peace, Judith. Judith was a controversial figure in my book. On the one hand, she was dealt a bad hand and was married to a guy that was, meh, found love and lost it, was tortured in public, forced to be separated from her lover's child for a while. She then was the lover of her father-in-law and lost her biological dad to the Vikings. She then loses that lover to suicide, her husband to a bee sting, and son to court intrigue. So, on the one hand, I feel sorry for her and hope she finds peace. On the other hand, she also killed her son, killed Mary Moon and child, and because of her first affair and Ekbert's trickery, Ragnar's first colony went bust. So, on that front, I hope she didn't rest in peace. So, I am conflicted. Thank you for bringing up the Mary Moon thing. That's a constant point of contention for me, and I think people forget that.
Don't forget Mary Moon was cray-cray, though, okay?
Sure. But fair enough. Fair point. Raven goes on to say, most valuable player goes to Uba. Uba, you are without a doubt the most valuable player this week. Uba, I think, was the brother who had a clue and was a smart strategist in getting the land that his father dreamt of from Alfred by being baptized Christian and showed a sign of faith by beating Finehair in battle. Now a force has come to raid and hurt your claim and you wanted to raid your land. You then beat the Alpha King, Frodo, in single combat, which he almost lost without his prayer to the old gods. You have a great wife in Torvi, and you have a good counselor now in Lagertha, as well as an army of followers now. I would be happy if the story ends there for this season. Yeah, that's a great point that you bring up. Like, all of that you said was true, and Uba is probably my favorite character of the season, even though we're really happy with what's happening with Fitzurk, and Harold Finehair's really come into his own as somebody who is compelling to watch. I still feel like Uba's, you know, my MVP too. But if I was thinking to myself, like in the last couple of days, I was like, what's going to happen with that story in the last episode of the season? And I don't want anything bad. Like, if they don't go back to those characters and they just focus on the battle in Kattegat, I'd be okay with that, because it's kind of just like, that feels like it's ended already. You don't want some like petty squabbles coming up threatening the East Anglian colony already.
Right.
So hopefully it doesn't happen. Raven goes on to say, random question. In light of the fact that the next episode is the last here and some random thoughts and questions, who will bring down Ivar? Will Fitzurk kill Freydis in revenge for Ivar killing Thora? Will Bjorn prevail? Will King Olaf or Finehair betray the brothers? Will Gunnhild die in battle? Not that I want her to, but given Bjorn's track record. Or out of left field, what if the son of Mary Moon, Magnus, takes down the son of Oslaug, Ivar?
Oh my god.
The sons of two crazy women to cancel each other out. Anywho, hope you have a great day or evening and happy recording from the freezing cold north. Raven.
You know what I was thinking earlier is that it just feels like there's going to be a Ragnarsson that's going to die this season. And it's like they're leading that up to that, telegraphing that. But what if it's Magnus? That would feel like such a cheap writing trick just to introduce that character to provide that death of a quote-unquote Ragnarsson.
I agree.
That better not be the case.
I agree. But well, you wouldn't get the emotional import of that. It would just be a technical foul kind of thing. Like when it goes down into the annals of history, like season 5B, we technically killed a Ragnarsson. No, you didn't. You gave us somebody who who was trying to spend the whole time he was on screen convincing other people that he was a Ragnarsson, but that doesn't mean anything.
I don't want to be shortchanged the moment where Ivar meets Magnus. Like you, I think you brought that up last episode, like how that would be really, really funny to see.
Him or Fitzurk, really. Either one. Probably Ivar more.
Ivar.
Yeah, Ivar more, because he would have that same reaction like when Fitzurk was talking about Buddhism and just be like, what?
I just get this image of him like just flicking a gnat off his shoulder or something. Like, it would amount to something like that, and Magnus would die in the process.
I have too many brothers already. Who else is my brother? Raise your hand now. Let it be known to all of Kattegat. Man, that's a lot of question. I don't know who's going to get to kill who. I don't think Gunnhild is going to die.
I don't either. She better not. I don't really see Fitzert killing Freydis either.
No. Yeah. And that, to me, doesn't... For a couple of reasons. First, because I don't feel like Fitzert is in the mode of revenge for anybody except for Ivar. Like, if he killed Ivar, that would be it. I don't think he wants to have a wide-angle spray on that revenge. Mostly because of his newfound spirituality and the, you know, the kind of... He probably feels like that's bad juju on some level. And secondly, because I think that Freydis is going to have something to do with Ivar's downfall one way or the other, just based on the looks that she was giving him. She's done. She's done. It just hasn't played itself out yet.
Somebody's going to be the Brutus. Any one of them could be. And the rest of them are going to be all of the other politicians who are going to be there, part of the shink, shink, shink of Ivar that's going to happen in the hall of Kattegat.
The Shank Gang?
The Shank Gang.
Yeah. The Shank Hill Butchers. Something. Thank you, Raven.
Except I'm comparing Ivar to Caesar, Julius Caesar. And
yeah, that's not.
That's not right.
That's not. Yeah, that's not the best comparison, I guess.
All right. Up next, we have Barbara.
Barbara.
Barbara says, "Hey, Em and Steve. Happy New Year and thanks for your recent podcast. And apologies for not contributing of late. I've really enjoyed this season, which I think is getting better and better. Some impressions of my one watch of this episode. I'm not sure what's going on with Floki. Is Hell simultaneously a cave like the one where Ragnar imprisoned him, or some kind of underground cathedral? Was that a volcano? Is he dead? His giggling / sobbing when he saw that cross was so touching, as though he saw the joke whilst being heartbroken that his dreams had come to this. I hope the story ends with him joining the Ragnarsons to go to Kattegat and give Ivar's head a wobble." "There was a lot about faith in this episode. Magnus praying to Jesus on the boat and Ubba praying to Odin, then winning the fight by a hair's breadth and ending up one-eyed like the god / father he called out to. He looks so like Ragnar. Is he going back to Kattegat? If all the brothers plus Torvi and Lagerthur create one big army, the next episode is gonna be good. I'd better go as I'm not sure I'm gonna make the deadline anyway. Lots of love, Barbara."
So... we talked about it in the podcast, and it's my understanding, I feel like it's our understanding at least, that when they left the Royal Villa, they were headed back to the East Anglian colony.
Yeah, that's what I thought, unless we're wrong about that.
Yeah, well, I didn't really think about it any other way until, I mean, I guess we have speculated on whether Lagertha would possibly go back to Kattegat at some point, but I don't think that's her story. When she says, I'm ready to go home, I don't think she meant Kattegat. Mm-hmm. I think she meant just to be around people of her own people and her own gods and stuff like that. And to try to find her new life, possibly just as a farmer. Like, nothing that she had said other than that phrase could point to the fact that she wants to go back. And Ubba's in no shape to be going to fight again.
Not during this season.
No, not for a while. So...
as in, like, the weather season that Bjorn and Harald just traveled through. But who knows what the timeline really is?
All this happened 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then...
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara. All right. Up next is Sarah, a.k.a. Dr. Deez. She says, "Hey, no shippers. There was a lot in this episode I really liked. Rest in peace to my girl, Judith. The moment of silence was disorienting and incredible camera work, poignant and appropriate for a character so much of the drama in Wessex has depended on. Pulling back in perspective, her and Athelstan's son and Ragnar's son, Ubbe, officially came into their own here." I love the duel between Ubbe and Frodo because it was brutal, raw, and near equal. Although I believed Ubbe would prevail, it was doubly satisfying when the Norse spirits spoke to him when he mirrored Ragnar's moment of death. Not that I'm against conversion, but like Torvi, I felt relieved that he knew for himself what gods were for him, and that it gave him the strength to claim his people, not just his father's. It was beautiful how he acknowledged the cross speaks to some people, like Alfred generously hoped his god and theirs would bless East Anglia. It seemed a little cheesy to have Alfred lead the Danes out there again, but I certainly appreciate the visuals and felt as if that part of Ragnar's heart was settled at last. Frankly, I don't appreciate the witch burning Lagertha's hair. Who asked you, lady? I wonder if this change will really stick or if the spirits will inspire her again, too. I know this sounds like a crazy wish for an episode called Ragnarok, but I hope nothing gets in the way of my new favorites, the frenemieship of Bjorn and Harald, and odd couple Fitzurk and Olaf. Harald was so petty after Bjorn dragged him through that storm, and their bro nod and arm pounding after Gunnhild grounded them was hilarious. It's also cute how Olaf finds Fitzurk amusing and smart. I'd like for them all to live somehow. But of course, save me, sweet baby Jeebus Magnus can go. Punk ass telling on himself. Are you referring here to when he's getting off the boat and he's like, well, I was praying to that god because that's all I've ever known.
Just revealing himself, I think.
Yeah. to be who
his he true, bubbled over.
His true character is revealed. Yeah. By the way, the shield maiden Bjorn made babysit Magnus is Alex Ludwig's girlfriend in real life. So him asking her name had me rolling. They couldn't have come up with a more organic way to introduce her. So funny. Have a great week, everyone. And see you at the end of the world, Dr. D's. I would like everybody except Ivar to live, too.
And Magnus.
Yeah, well, Magnus can go at any time. There's the door.
See, she's more down on Harald than I was, because I was more on Harald's side with that argument between him and Bjorn, and I'm sticking to that.
I'm on your side with that. It's from a pragmatic point of view. You're thinking of it. It's like, look, I told you we shouldn't have done this. It ended as badly as I said it would. Now you're telling me what I need to do with my army. You know,
I mean, even though he was right, that's not really the reason why. I just his frustration is just with the ridiculousness of how some people just have that charismatic shine that it seems undeserving at times.
Yeah,
that I totally get. I mean, it's lame to openly talk about it. I mean, there's got to be a way for you to process it and deal with it without like, having a fight on a beach like they did. But I appreciate the frustration being depicted for me to actually see in a character, to see somebody to be motivated and even halted because of that hang up they have.
Yeah.
Both. In a way, it kind of motivates him.
It motivates Harald?
Yeah.
Yeah. You bring up a good point, though, because, you know, you do – I don't run into that many people in my actual life who have that kind of charisma, and definitely nobody who – I hope nobody who thinks that the gods are blessing their every moment. But, you know, that I understand that shine and that charm of charisma that people have, and you feel like, hey, I'm just doing my thing, and everybody else has got to go along with it, and blah, blah, blah. And you don't really ever call them out, because then you look like the bad guy, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, Harald looks like she described a petty asshole, but you still can't help but like feel what he feels. Or maybe that's just my own personal experience.
I don't know. I mean, ostensibly you're on Bjorn's side, like as far as let's attack Kattegat and get rid of Ivar.
Right. Yeah.
But Harald, like, kind of like I'm glad it ended how it ended, but I'm glad he did what he did. I'll say that. I'm glad that Gunnhild was able to get in there and smack some sense into them and say, go off to your separate corners and just let's put this on the shelf for right now. But it is good that Harald brought it up because
it's out in the open.
Yeah.
They expended some energy over it. And now they both can walk away from this and think about it a little bit more and maybe have a better way of dealing with it with each other the next time the subject matter comes up.
Exactly. Talk it out next time. Be like, hey, you remember the stuff we fought about last time? Maybe we could just talk about it this time.
And Sarah, I'm with you about Lagertha's hair. If that was me and if some old lady was or anybody was trying to cut my hair,
yes,
they would have got cat-like back pawed batting to the face. Something like that would have came out of me, you know?
Feline freak out.
Yeah.
Okay, and so Sarah also has a PS. And she says, oh man, I can't believe I almost forgot. What happened in the cave? At first, I totally thought Hurst had sold out to working in Nightfall somehow and made Floki find the Holy Grail.
I know, because he did have a chalice.
Yeah, I mean, that crossed my mind too. Not the whole Nightfall thing, but like, you're finding a chalice right around a crucifix. And so it's like, what are they trying to say here? But turns out it was... Sarah goes on to say, turns out it was just a big old cup of irony.
That goes with a chalice.
Considering how certain he was that coming to Iceland was the god's will, but it was all for nothing. I wonder if this is something we can look for going forward in the next episode. Someone who knows the gods want something, but gets opened a can of celestial whoop-ass instead. Could you be talking about Ivar?
Yeah.
Could it be again? All right. I'm out again. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes. Thank you, Sarah. I mean, my first thought definitely is Ivar that she's talking about. But
yeah. Somebody who thinks that the gods are on their side and knows he's just got to check those opinion polls.
But Fitzhugh also kind of talks a lot about the gods, too.
Well, she says knows in capitals. So I don't think that Fitzhugh feels like he knows because he's actually counseling Olaf maturely and probably correctly to say, hey, look, we don't know what the gods have in store. So he's keeping it kind of loose and open to say, I every time I think I know what somebody wants out of me, fate has something different in store, so I'm rolling with it.
Yeah, but he does think he knows that his fate is to kill Ivar.
Yeah, that does seem inescapable for him. But I still think it's Ivar that we're talking about here.
Thank you, Sarah. And up next, we have Peggy. And Peggy says, hello, I am Peggy, and this is my first feedback, although I have followed your podcast since it began. I look forward to it every week, and the whole experience of the TV series is twice as enjoyable thanks to the podcast. I haven't had the nerve to send any feedback yet. All the feedback I hear sounds so intelligent and makes such good points. I fear I would sound like the Chris Farley show from SNL, where he would say, for instance, remember when? And would describe a scene where the guest's movie and the guest would say yes, and Chris would always answer the same way with, that was awesome. I do have a couple of comments, though. Ivar's banners, hanging in his throne room and elsewhere throughout Kattegat, remind me of Nazi flags. Love the scene this week where Bjorn and King Harald were in the middle of a fierce fight and Gunhild came between them and ordered them to stop. And they were like, okay, we'll pick this up later. No hard feelings. Lastly, how did Judith go from feeling a lump in her breast to her deathbed in the same amount of time that it took for Uba and Torby's trip to the Three Kings and back? I guess it could have already been that advanced, but seemed to have progressed pretty fast. Well, that's it for now. And I'll say one more thing about your podcast. It is awesome. Thank you, Peggy. Thank you for writing in.
Thank you, Peggy.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to channel my inner
Chris Farley. Remember the time that Peggy wrote in feedback?
It was awesome.
Nice call on the banners looking like the Nazi flags that you always see in the old World War II clips.
It occurred to me too, but then, you know, it's also noticing the banners in Fitzhugh's camp with Olaf. You know, there's a very feel to all of them.
It kind of, it goes to show how something can be innocent in one scenario, and then when you have some other markers to push you in a certain direction in a different scenario, those things become sinister real quick.
Impressive, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Peggy.
Thanks, Peggy.
All right. Next up, our final piece of feedback is from Tim, and he says, I know this probably won't get to you before you record, but wow, what an episode. Ah, but it did. As much as I haven't been able to stand Judith for the last season or so, that was a cold way to take her out. Her death was barely even on screen. I was looking forward to seeing her and Lagertha teaming up for a while. Ube's fight was amazing, brutal, and ugly, like a real fight, and I'm always happy to see a sea axe getting used. I also love Bjorn and Harald trying to kill each other and then bumping bows and nodding to each other when they realized how dumb they were being. Such typical men. The episode is also dripping with the cave metaphor. In many traditions, caves represent birth, and we see almost all of our characters being, quote, born again in one way or another after going through some kind of trial or tragedy.
Nice.
Nice poll. Yeah. Tim. Thank you. I can't wait to see the final showdown between the Sons of Ragnar for the fate of Kattegat.
Me too. Great feedback. Thanks for bringing up the cave metaphor.
Yeah, that's cool. That escaped me as well. Yeah, and I think we're all on the same page about Judith. It's whether or not you were into her character going into this season, or if you got completely turned off with the death of Æthelred, or whatever, wherever you're at, wherever you fall on Judith, you feel a little bit shortchanged on the way that her death was presented on screen. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for the actress too, Jenny Jacks, like she should have had more of a send off, not just the character of Judith, but also for Jenny Jacks.
Yeah, you're right. It does. It just
because she made Judith awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Thank you, Tim.
Farewell, Jenny Jacks.
Yes.
Good luck in whatever you do. And thank you, Tim, for your feedback.
All right. So that wraps up another episode of our coverage of Vikings on the Wild Hunt. We only have, that's it. Next week is the end of season 5. So I'm sure everybody is excited, yet a little bit sad, because this has actually been, I will admit freely that this has been a better half season than I thought I was going to get.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you know, it feels like ritualistic because we've had this I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. We've had this routine going on where, you know, after work on Wednesdays, we meet at your dad's house, we have something to eat, we watch some like Pawn Stars or whatever it is, and then we watch
watch CNN or we watch Pawn Stars
or a little bit of both.
Yeah,
and then we watch Vikings, then we go home, and you know, and then we got a day or two to digest it, then we podcast, read everybody's feedback, and then the whole cycle starts over again. So one more week of enjoying that, and then that's it till November with the Vikings. So all right, so stay tuned, same time next week, we will see you then. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host Steve,
and I am your host Em. Axe time.
Sword time.
Shields are splintered.
Bam. We forgot to mention, did we talk about it in the, like, in Ube's fight, there was axes,
holy
swords,
shit,
and splintered shields.
There was, yeah, it was axe time, sword time, splintered shields all the way in Ube's fight. We totally did not mention that. But we were saying it as we were watching it the last time we watched it. Damn it.
Speaking of Hurst, you know, like, trying to gauge reactions on stuff like that, he totally ran with that. We have the running joke that Hurst actually listens to this podcast. That's a
yeah, he was speaking to us, man.
This one's for you guys.
In our dreams.
We're out.